Cape Talk. Food.
Something a little different today. We're all about the flavors of Russia as we welcome in studio some of the team behind the reimagining of Hazendal Wine Estate in Stellenbosch. Simone Voloshin is the daughter of estate owner Dr. Mark Voloshin, and we're also delighted to have with us the estate's executive chef, Michelle Turon. So nice to have you both with us in studio. Thanks for making the trip.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Simone, let's start, before we talk about the food, let's talk a little bit about this very special estate, because this is actually one of the oldest wine estates in South Africa. How long does it trace its history? When was it first laid out?
So Hazendal's history dates back to 1699, when a German settler, Christopher Hasenwinkel, made his way to the Cape, and he was granted 60 hectares of land off the Bottleray Hills, Governor Willem Andren van der Stel. And he was inspired by his own name, Christopher Hasenwinkel. Hasen is the hare, as well as the population of Cape hares that inhabited and lived at the farm during those time. And he named the farm Hazendal.
Okay.
So then the farm went through several ownerships. And in 1831, it was purchased by Itzhak Bosman. And then it stayed in the Bosman family for five generations.
Wow.
And in 1994, it was purchased by my father, and about 3 years ago he decided that he wants to restore the farm and he wants to fulfill a long time dream to restore this estate into a unique winelands destination. What he likes to say is that the farm, you know, traditionally the farm was a very popular stopover for oxen travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Because of its location, it was very close to Cape Town and to Stellenbosch. So what he likes to say is that he would like to continue this tradition for the farm to be a stopover,
mm-hmm.
but this time not for oxen travelers, but for people who pass by and for friends and family to stop over and to get together over great food, great wine, and to enjoy nature and the heritage of the farm.
And we're going to talk about the great food in just a moment, but there's more to the restoration than just the food. I mean, your father has done extensive work, not only in making the most of the beautiful historic buildings there, but in getting together all kinds of attractions that would cause people to come and stop over there. Let's talk about a few of those, starting with the art, because I know he's put together a collection of a mix of Russian and South African artists. What's happening at the art gallery?
So the art gallery is one window in Russian culture that he would like to share with a local guest. So a big part of his vision was, as I said, to preserve the local heritage, but then also to bring in a little bit of his own heritage of his mother country, which is Russia, and then share some of his historic traditions with our visitors. So you can get the Russian flavor, like you said, in our art gallery, where we're showcasing Russian art. So at the moment we're exhibiting some of his own personal collection, but then we are also partnering with other Russian emerging artists and giving them a possibility and a space to showcase their talents. So the Russian flavor is really seen in a couple of offerings. You can see it in all of our menus, and our chef Michelle can talk a little
we'll
bit
get
more
to that
about
in a minute.
The Russian food offering. You can also see it in our Russian tea ceremony, which we're going to talk about a bit later. And you can also see it in, for instance, our vodka range that we're very excited about, and we're going to launch it in due time. So that is very exciting, where we're actually blending tradition, using sort of traditional vodka crafting methods, but the innovative part of this is that we're using actually South African grapes.
Okay, can't wait for the first taste when that's ready. I would be remiss in not mentioning what you've done in terms of welcoming children on the estate. There is something called Vonderdal. Tell us more about what's happening there.
Yes, one very important aspect for us when we thought about the development of the estate is to make it very family friendly. And so we introduced Wonderdal, which is one of our most exciting offerings, I would say. It is basically a kids' edutainment center where kids of age 5 to 13 can learn in a very playful way about different forms of energy, about recycling. They can learn how plants are being grown, about healthy nutrition. And the innovative part of it is that it actually blends very advanced digital technology with creative space design. And all of the learning zones are curriculum aligned. So we've actually worked with an educational consultant who aligned all the different zones with the educational teachings of South Africa's curriculum. So that really makes it an amazing outing for schools, as well as parents, because obviously for parents, they can come and enjoy all of the other wonderful Hasendal offerings while the kids are being taken care of and engaged in a very playful way and having sort of like meaningful play experience.
Sounds absolutely incredible. I'm only sorry my kids are just too old to be able to come and visit. But there we go. Now let's talk about the food, because this is after all our food segment, and the main reason they're here is because friends of mine said to me, you've got to go and try the amazing food that we just ate at Hasendal. Let's talk a little bit about Russian cuisine from the perspective of somebody who grew up with Russian heritage, Simone, and then Michelle, I'm going to bring you in to talk about how you've then interpreted that in the restaurants. I know Russian cuisine is hugely diverse. We're talking about a huge country and so many different cultures within it that it's hard to pinpoint. But Simone, can you give us a sense of some of the key elements of Russian influences in food?
So like you said, Russian cuisine is very diverse. It has influences from Northern and Eastern Europe. It has influence from the Caucasian region, from Central Asia, from Siberia, East Asia. But I would say that the foundations of Russian food were laid by the peasants who lived in the rural areas. And also because of the climate in this region, Russian food is traditionally based on very nourishing and hearty dishes, such as soups or meat-based stews. And there are also a lot of wheat and barley-based dishes. And I would say that these are really the staple foods of Russian cuisine.
So, for example, tell us about some of the dishes that you grew up eating as a child.
Well, just going back to what I said, and saying that Russian soups form like sort of a big part of Russian cuisine. In my home, it was a tradition. I needed to have a warm soup every day. No matter if it was a hot summer day or if it was a cold winter day, it was the tradition to have a warm soup. And then I also grew up really on all Russian traditional dishes, bistroganov, blinis, pilmeni. My mother, who actually immigrated from Russia about 50 years ago, and although she lived in different countries and she traveled a lot, at home in the kitchen, she was very traditional. So really, that's all she cooked. She cooked Russian foods. And then unfortunately, when I left home, because Russian food is quite complex and it's not easy, actually. It's often quite time consuming, and Michelle can vouch for that. And I'm just a bit lazy in the kitchen. So I didn't really continue this tradition, but it was really always an amazing treat and luxury to be able to go back home and then enjoy these wonderful dishes that my mom used to create and still makes till today.
Amazing. Now let's bring Michelle in at this point. You've been listening up until now to Simone Voloshin, who is the daughter of the owner of Hasendal, Dr. Mark Voloshin. But with us in studio is also the estate's executive chef, Michelle Turon. And I know a lot of our listeners will have eaten and fallen in love with your food when you were at P&F La Motte. How long have you been at Hasendal now?
April has been a year already.
Okay.
Can you believe it? It's gone so fast.
And Michelle, I mean, did you have any experience whatsoever with Russian flavors and cuisine and ingredients before this posting?
I knew a little bit of it, obviously, but to be brutally honest, I'd never really applied myself to cooking it before. So starting off on this journey was so much fun because you're starting with something totally new to you. So it makes it interesting. It makes it a challenge, which I think is always good to have. So,
and a lot of experimentation required.
Yeah, it gets those creative juices flowing properly.
You are sitting on a gold mine in that you have a Russian family with you on the estate, no doubt with cookbooks and family recipes involved. Simone, did you share some of those recipes with Michelle and say, work with this? Did you
and
have access?
Tastings. No, they brought me so much stuff to taste and shared so many recipes. And I think that was kind of an integral part for me, to kind of learn and experience it. Because I've got people that can come and sit and do the tasting and say, try it this way or what about that? Because otherwise I wouldn't have known. And it really makes it so much fun. I know even my team, we really had a ball preparing for opening the few months we had before, like trying everything out, applying new ways of doing the old recipes to kind of modernize it and also bringing in the South African flavor of things, I want to say.
So can you give us some examples of how you South Africanized some of the Russian dishes?
Listen, it's actually super interesting. I think being at Pirine Filamot for so long actually was quite a good stepping stone because of the word heritage cuisine, because it is global cooking and there's a lot of similarities I could find from doing that when I started getting to know the Russian food and the Russian culture a bit. To see those similarities that there were, especially with the European influences that obviously came to South Africa, which made it nice to kind of now combine those two together. Where we could now take, as Simone mentioned, we could take Asian influences, we could take the slow cooked influences that we call our breadies, which like their meat stews. We could take that and kind of fuse them together and have a story to tell at the end of the day about it. And I think people, our South African clients pick it up. We get good feedback from our European clients, our Russian clients as well. It's something new. It's something different that you don't really see a lot at other restaurants. Yeah. So it's something new to try.
You've got, your work cut out for you because it's not just one restaurant. You've got several different dining options on the farm.
You.
So tell us a little bit more.
Listen, there's no way for me to get bored ever, I suspect. No, listen, we're having so much fun. It's quite an offering. There's literally something for everybody. We've got the fine dining restaurant. We have the Babushka Deli, which is your a little bit more informal side, very family friendly. It's right next to Wunderdal, which makes it absolutely brilliant. And then we also have our Wonder Truck, which is our food truck that is right next to Wunderdal as well, which is serves up easygoing, on the go, I want to say food on the move type meals for the kiddies and the parents when they just come out of Wonderdal. We're also currently working on an open fire cooking venue, which will open probably now in the next few weeks. And that is a nice fusion between your South African, again, style of cooking, but we'll bring a lot of Russian flavor into that as well. And then we've got our wine tasting center, which will also then host food and wine pairings pretty soon. So there's literally loads going on. And you have to, and that's why I want to call it a destination. You have to come a few times to kind of experience all the different offerings.
Yeah.
And then, I also like to focus on also a little bit more of the healthier side of things, fresh, light. So we take all of those, influences that we do, all of the cuisines we do, but we try to make it a little bit lighter, a little bit more healthier.
What about sourcing ingredients? I mean, some of the ingredients that Simone mentioned, for example, you know, the buckwheat, the barley, etc., they can be found in South Africa, but they're not necessarily in common use in South Africa. Firstly, is it easy for you to source what you need? And secondly, is it easy to sell those ingredients to your diners and say, try this, trust me, you're going to love it?
Listen, most definitely. It's everything is readily available. I think it's the fun part is actually now showcasing it to people the way we do it and making it fun, making it exciting. It's hearty cooking, but it's not what you'll normally find. So I think people are enjoying it. One of the dishes that's really doing so well is, because I'm absolutely a sucker for ramen, I absolutely love it. Instead of doing it with noodles, we've made the palmini, which is like a Russian ravioli, a pasta like ravioli with a meat filling, but we've used that instead of noodles with as a ramen based dish, which is super beautiful, in a mushroom broth, which is also a lot of Russian dishes contain salted mushrooms or even preserved mushrooms, which is quite interesting. So a risotto-based dish that is like, I know there's a barley porridge in the Russian cuisine, and we've just made it, taken the idea and now made it into almost like a risotto, which is fabulous, and people really enjoy it. And another thing that we actually also do because people see these different dishes, they would like to try everything. We do it as small plates, which help me with the pronunciation.
Zakuski.
There we go.
Zakuski. Okay.
Yes. So people not only have to take a full a la carte menu if they want to, they can also try it as small plates and try
a little bit of everything
and pair it with the wines, which is super exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I love the idea of taking peasant food and elevating it to a fine dining experience. That is really, really wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about fish. I'm looking at the latest menu from Avant-Garde, the fine dining restaurant, and I see a lightly smoked fish and potato pampushki with curried sweet potato, dried Turkish apricots, and parsley cream. What fish would you use, and how do you translate what would be eaten in Russia, which I'm guessing would be more river fish than sea fish, or is it a combination of both, Simone?
Yeah, I think these days, you know, also in Russia, everything is really readily available. Okay. I mean, these days, you know, everything has become sort of global. I think, you know, people are sort of like learning from each other, being inspired from each other. So you could also have the same style of food in Russia.
Even if it's a different kind of food. Yes. So what fish would you use, for example, in that dish?
For me, for instance, I say fish and I don't specify what, because I try to obviously always be sustainable. So it depends on what is green listed that I could get. But mostly it would be hake that I use, or sometimes I mean most of the chefs use abalone these days, so you literally get your phone pinging and then you see what's up and what
the app
you can
tells
use.
You what's been caught
exactly
that day. Yeah.
So sometimes you get the most beautiful mackerel as well, so it depends on what's green listed, what's available, and then we literally take it from there. I do the same with all my meats and my poultry as well. So
never mind the fish. Let me just say the words Fabergé dessert, a Fabergé-inspired chocolate-filled egg with seasonal ice cream. I'm coming for that alone, I have to tell you. I mean, I can just imagine how beautiful and delicate that would have to be.
Listen, it's so much fun, actually. I've got such a talented pastry chef working with me, Corinne Hutting. She's super brilliant. So we had the idea after seeing the Fabergé eggs in the exhibition, actually, that why don't we put up a dessert? We have our eggshells made, and then every month when we change our menu, we can actually change the dessert. So we don't even know what it's going to be the next time we change it. We're still figuring that out, but it makes it fun. There's different ways of presenting it. The one time we presented and the way it will go and just knock it open so it cracks open at the table. The current one we have now is already open with stuff kind of looks like it's pouring out of it. So it's like art on a plate pretty much. So the pastry team can have a lot of fun with that dish. And as I said, it's ever changing. So, and they can bejewel it or, you know, do whatever they want with it. It's super fun.
Sounds amazing. I'd love to hear from any of our listeners who've traveled to Russia and have had the experience of eating traditional Russian cuisine, and tell us about the dishes you loved or found challenging, or particular ingredients that stood out for you. You can leave us a voice note on 072-567-1567, or send us an SMS, as somebody has done, anonymous, asking about borscht. I mean, this is one of the, I think, most recognizable dishes. The question is, do you serve borscht? And secondly, do you serve it hot or cold at your restaurants?
I have to tell you, actually, the best one I've had is actually Ina bought me her one. It's a vegetarian one, and it was cold. Absolutely beautiful dish. So I can't take any recognition for that one. It's literally Ina's whole recipe that I use. So thank you, Ina. I really appreciate it. But yeah, you can do it hot or cold. We prefer to do the cold one.
The cold. I mean, it suits the South African environment, not on a day like this, but in summer, certainly. Yes. Simone, I mean, when you grew up, did you have it hot or cold?
Hot, actually.
Hot, okay.
So that's sort of, I think, more traditionally is it's served hot. But then, you know, it's actually my sister, like, she also introduced Michelle to it. I think these days also it's more common to also have it
cold as well.
Definitely one of my favorites. It's just, I mean, first of all, it's beautiful. Just the colors.
That looks ruby, yes.
That ruby red just looks so beautiful on every table. And then it's also, I think, just... it's quite light, and like we said now, it really works all year round. So borscht is definitely one of my favorites.
Okay. Then here's an intriguing question from Lee. Lee says to me on the SMS line, and I was recently introduced to something called a Russian salad, and I've been wondering ever since if it was actually typically Russian at all. It was a base of boiled potatoes with carrots and pickles and peas and a mayonnaise dressing. Very delicious, but is that really Russian? It is. Michelle's nodding. Simone's
it's
nodding.
It's definitely Russian.
Okay.
It's actually your father's favorite. Yes. The Olivier salad.
Olivier salad is the correct name for it. Okay. Potatoes, I mean, are a staple, we know, and in many peasant food cultures around the world. So a mayonnaise dressing with other veggies. Do you serve one on the menu at Peasant?
Yes, it actually is on our Russian tea menu as one of the savory little items to taste, have.
Okay, which leads us to the tea ceremony, because we would be remiss in not mentioning this. There is an opportunity to go to the Russian tea garden and take part in a traditional Russian tea ritual. Simon, do you want to tell us a little bit more about that ritual?
Yes, so I think what is an important ingredient of a Russian tea ceremony is that it's all about good conversation. I think that's sort of the first ingredient, and it's about getting together and just engaging in a nice talk and chat. Now, every Russian tea ceremony, traditional Russian tea ceremony, will start with a samovar, which is a type of tea urn that is used to boil water. And then on top of the tea urn, you typically have a teapot with a strong tea brew that is being kept warm through the steaming samovar. Mm-hmm. And then around the samovar, there's quite a lot of rituals around it. As you can hear, around the samovar, you have a necklace that consists of baranki. Baranki is a Russian-style cookie, I would say almost similar to a South African rusk. And then the tradition is that you will break up these baranki from that string that is hung around the samovar, and then you just dip it in your tea. Now, the black tea brew, the way Russian tea is served, you use the black tea brew and serve it typically also in Russian porcelain, and we imported some beautiful Russian Delivo cups that are all hand-painted in traditional Russian porcelain, and they form part of our Russian tea ceremony. So you pour some of the strong tea brew, and then you add hot water to it that also comes from the samovar, and then you can basically strengthen the tea or have it a bit weaker depending on how you like to drink your tea.
Do you add milk and sugar in Russia, or is it straight tea?
Well, traditionally in Russia, you actually sweeten your tea with jam.
Really?
So it also forms part of the Russian tea ceremony, where we like to really give the traditional experiences. So all of our guests get a little bit of jam. And then the tradition is that you take a spoon of the jam and then you sip it with your tea.
With the tea. Do we know how that came to be? Why jam instead of sugar?
Yes, because jam was more widely available in Russia, and sugar was actually quite an expensive ingredient. And then it was also quite easy to store it. So, for instance, during the winter months, again, so in summer, you could actually create jam and you could preserve it. So it will also last you through the winter.
Okay, tea with jam. A drink with jam and bread, or with jam and cookies in this case, I'm thinking of. Now, to come and enjoy the tea ceremony at Hazendell, I mean, you have all kinds of, I know, delicate little things to taste as you enjoy the tea and the conversation. How long should you set aside typically for the full tea ceremony? It's not something to be enjoyed on a quick visit. You should really have a good long stretch of time, should you not?
Most certainly. I think, a good 2 hours. I mean, each tea ceremony is accompanied by a beautiful plate of traditional Russian pastries. We have a sweet and savory. So in order also to savor all these pastries, and we're serving it also in our Russian tea garden when the weather allows. So I think also to enjoy the views, you should definitely take some time. And there's also a very famous Russian saying that states, you know, you come over for tea, you start with tea, and then a few hours later, you end up with a 3-course meal and some vodka. So you can also certainly do that at Hazendell, should you wish to.
Okay. You mentioned the vodka again. So Mark has just messaged me saying, do Russians really drink as much vodka as they show us in the movies?
Yes.
All right. So exciting to know that you're going to be introducing your own vodka range in the not-too-distant future. What else is bubbling under that people should know about?
There are lots of things. So where do we start? Well, as Michelle mentioned, we're going to open our pivnushka. Pivnushka means beer garden in Russian. Okay. So we're going to open that about end of August, where we're going to offer a range of beers, vodka, hopefully, if it's ready for the opening, and then also some really great sort of barbecue-style open fire food to accompany it. And we're also actually working on a golf course.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, okay. On a golf course. It's going to be a meshy course. an 18-hole meshi course. And again, the family focus has been very important for us. So we want to start sort of like a kids academy there and also make it available for, you know, families that usually don't have so much time also. I mean, time is luxury these days and not everyone can really, you know, have a 3-4 hours time to play like a whole goal. Course. Now we're creating that because it's one of the passions of my father. There we see that there's really a lot of interest also from the community for something like that.
Well, definitely one to add to the map for your next outing out of Cape Town into the Winelands. Hazendal has lots going on and lots new to go and explore and eat, more importantly. I want to direct you to their website, which is www.hazendal.co.za. You can also give them a call on 021-205-5620 to book at one of the various restaurants or organize your picnic basket from the Babushka Deli. And lovely to have had you both with us in studio today. You've been listening to Simon Voloshin, part of the family who owns the estate, as well as their executive chef, Michelle Turon. How do you say cheers in Russia? How should we end the interview?
Paka.
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 Paka. Thank you so much for coming in. And look forward to visiting you soon. Thanks for coming in and sharing a bit of the magic of Russian flavor with us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.